Welcome to Supercharge My Practice, a podcast dedicated to helping you build a thriving and fulfilling natural therapies business. Each week, your host, Anil Mustafa, interviews leading practitioners and field experts, sharing proven tactics, inspiring stories, and actionable steps that will help you unlock your potential. Supercharge My Practice is proudly brought to you by My Appointments Practice Management System.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Supercharge My Practice podcast. Today's guest is Bonnie Wicks, who is an SEO copywriter, keynote speaker, podcaster, and the founder of The Caffeinated Copywriter. With a knack for crafting compelling copy, Bonnie empowers individuals and businesses to enhance their online presence and effectively communicate their message to their ideal clients. Bonnie, welcome. Such a pleasure to have you on the show today.
Thank you and welcome. And I think I need to steal that bit of copy you just wrote for me for an intro.
Now tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you become a copywriter? How did you get to where you are today?
This is always the hardest story to tell, and I always find even with my clients the About Us page and defining your story, it's so difficult. So let's go. 2019, I was in a job. It was really, really toxic. There was a lot of gaslighting, emotional abuse. And one afternoon, I couldn't take it anymore. And so I left that afternoon and I left halfway through a meeting and I ended up getting fired, which was a blessing in disguise. And I'm sure that a lot of your listeners may have gone through very similar things as well, or have known people that have gone through things. And I was sitting there going, what do I do now? I cannot go through that experience again. And thankfully, I was working towards being a BAS agent, so which is a qualified bookkeeper, and started doing that as a job. Found out very quickly that I did not like it, and I started doing creative things on the side. I would make brands up and do a whole like brand foundation. I would write the website copy. I would do all of that. And I'd never launch. I'd get like distracted by the next shiny things. So I think I went designed like three different candle brands, a book subscription box, all of those things. When I then fell pregnant with my first child and went through postpartum, it was a life-defining moment. And I realized I do not want to go back to a job that's not so fulfilling. And I was lucky enough to be introduced to an agency who was looking for someone to kind of just contract their copywriting to. And when I found out about copywriting, I was like, oh my goodness, light bulb moment. This is it. Like everything I had done up until this point led to this moment. Learning about digital marketing, learning about conversion rate optimizations for my bookkeeping business, doing the brand foundations and the copywriting for all of the businesses that I had planned and never, ever got off the ground. All of that was practice and learning for this moment. And I fell in love with it. Then fast forward to my second child, and I went through once again another postpartum epiphany of it is time to do this for myself. It is time to make a greater impact. And then that is when the Caffeinated Copywriter came to life.
Fantastic. And you must love coffee because of the title and your branding and everything that I see even in your email communication is all about coffee.
And it's more than just coffee. And I hope this can be subtly conveyed through my branding. When I was doing the branding, I was like, what is the one thing I want people to feel when they're working with me? And I wanted them to feel warm and comfortable, like when they go into their favorite cafe and it's like, oh, it's familiar, it's warm, the smells are great, they feel inspired. And so the coffee charm, it's not just because I love coffee, which I do, but it's also to be relatable and to convey that vibe, that theme that I really wanted to put out.
I love that. So the focus of today's podcast is about email marketing, but your skill sets naturally lie in the copywriting for SEO, for content marketing, and of course, copy for ads as well. So can you share some strategies for effective copywriting and how this might vary depending on where you're publishing the content to?
The cornerstone of all good copy is focusing on your audience. And I know this sounds really, really simple, but it's something we always get caught up in. So often I see people who think about how do they convey their authority? How do they convey what they do and how they help rather than thinking about who's going to be reading this, what do they need from this? How are they going to interpret this? And that slight shift is the cornerstone of good copy. And that also helps with different platforms. So when you write copy or captions, say for Instagram, who's your audience? Like, who do you want to talk to? Who is listening to you on that platform? And how do they speak? And it might be different to TikTok. I recently heard something off on a tangent called the millennial pause, which I had never heard of before. And it's apparently millennials, such as myself, when they start doing videos, there's always that like second pause where they hit record, there's a pause, and it's like, hello, where millennial, like the younger generation, don't do that. They're talking and then they're hitting record whilst they're talking. And so it's those little things. It's about who is listening, who is my audience, and then how do they communicate and thinking about that.
Right. Okay. That's interesting. And I think this is something where like it sounds, not cliche is not the right word, but it sounds very simple to say, thinking about your client and what they're thinking on their end. But it is something that I see commonly in businesses where it's the what's in it for me factor, right? And so a lot of businesses don't see that. They see it, but they see it on their end instead of their client's end. So when they're writing their copy or when they're putting anything out there, it should be what's in it for me, for their clients, not for themselves. So when a lot of business owners put copy out there, it's I'm a naturopath, I specialize in, or I do this, or I do that. And they're talking about features and not talking about benefits for their clients. So although it seems quite simple, there's a lot of people that are going wrong in marketing because they're not focusing on what's in it for their clients. So thank you for raising that point.
So, and that is a great point. And one of the things, just jumping in there, that I always get every single client to audit is go to your website and count on your homepage how many times you've written the word we and how many times you've written the word you.
I like
and
that.
Then that shows you who you're writing the copy for.
Yeah, I like that. That's great. Great little technique there. So some business owners believe that email marketing is dead and it doesn't work and that people don't open emails anymore. I want to know what you think about this and what makes email marketing such a valuable or powerful business tool, in your opinion.
This could take the whole podcast, but I'll make it really quick. A lot of people think email marketing is dead is because they've gone onto social media. And social media got really, really popular because it was free. You had instant access to audience. But it's comparing apples to oranges. Email marketing isn't dead, but it's different. You don't get that instant gratification of people, engaging and liking and that dopamine hit that you get from social media, but you have a more nurtured and engaged audience. Why it's different is you have to, people don't just want tips and tricks anymore. You can't just go, sign up to my newsletter. Here's a tip about, how to improve your back posture, because people are just Googling that now. You can put that on socials, but with emails, they want to be more personalized. And it's really, really powerful because with social media, you can lose that at any point. They can change the algorithms. You can get hacked. I have known many, many people that have had, say, 50,000 audiences in Instagram have been hacked and have lost it all. You own your list on email marketing. So these are people who have said to you, I want to hear from you. I'm here. I'm really engaged. I'm a warm lead. Talk to me, nurture me, and that will never, ever, ever die.
Absolutely. I agree with that too. And I think the other thing that people commonly miss, the differences between email versus social media, is that in social media, your organic reach is typically 5 to 7, maybe 8%. That's what, the stats are showing us now. So you might have, let's say you've got 1,000 followers. If only 5 to 7% of those people are actually seeing your content versus you've got an email list of 1,000 people and your open rate is around 30%, then you're instantly hitting more eyeballs by emailing people as opposed to social media. And I think that's a big thing that most people don't see. And the other difference for me personally is that email marketing is intentional, whereas social media is disruptive. It means somebody didn't go onto social media to look for your better posture techniques or your story about XYZ. They came there because they were mindlessly scrolling, reading up to catch up what people they follow are doing or saying. Whereas email is intentional. You go there, you open your email, you read the content that's there. And so the open rate and the engagement rate, you don't get that dopamine, as you said, because you're not getting an immediate response from the people. You're not getting a like. You don't know how much they've read or anything like that. But your email open rates are so obvious and you can see what kind of engagement you're getting from that perspective. You can see your click-through rates. So for me personally, if I was building my business from scratch today, my focus would be more on email marketing and building my email list. Again, for the reasons that you've said, you own that list. You can't have your email, you know, account hacked or, you know, people taking that away from you like you could, you can with social media. But also the intent behind people opening, deliberately opening your emails and that response rate that you're getting is typically going to be much better than anything you can get organically through social media. And for me personally, I'd really love to hear your thoughts on this as well, Bonnie. I think the effort, the response that you can get from an engaged email list versus the effort and energy it takes to build a social media following are chalk and cheese. Like, I feel personally that the email marketing is so much more impactful and so much less time consuming than what social media is. So would you agree with that?
Yes and no. So hear me out. I do believe, as you said, I think that, you know, return on investment in email marketing is higher for email marketing versus social media. I definitely believe that, and I think this comes to the no part of my reasoning. You're looking at different types of funnels, or like the different stages of the funnel. So if we are, once again, going back to your audience, going back to these leads, your clients, the people that are coming to you, we want to think, what is the journey they're going on? And it, a lot of online businesses and even, you know, the local-based businesses are finding this now. The first step is they will go to your social media. They want to get that feel. And so that's why social media, it's not social media versus email marketing. I think they have very different places. So they'll go to that social media. They'll check you out. They'll make sure that you're real. They'll try and find your face. Who are you? They want to know you. And then if they're like, okay, I kind of like this vibe, then they'll go down to your email marketing. This is like the middle of the funnel. So you might have a lead magnet or some type of enticement, and then they'll start reaching out to you. And that's when you put them on that email marketing. So those people are more engaged. They are likelier to just buy from you or to contact you or engage with you because they've already gone through that awareness stage and now they're going to that, like that really that trust and like stage.
I like that. So I guess the lesson in that is that social media is great to engage new people, yes, but the email list is probably better to nurture those people and build a relationship and convert those people into sales.
And that's exactly right. And that is where the return on investment is, because it is cheaper to sell to new, sell to your existing client base. Mm-hmm. So to give those sales and the discounts and that promotional material to people that know, like, and trust you already, they are more likely to keep coming back. So it's, you know, your return investment in engaging with those people is so much higher than the return investment on the people that are just coming into your universe on social media.
And you bring up a very good point as well, is that most people do go to social media. I think once upon a time when somebody wanted to get to know you better, they'd go to your website first. But I believe that's really changing a lot now, and they are going to social media because social media shows your personality, whereas a website doesn't have that same impact because they can see your copy. There might be a video on there, but on social media, there's typically a lot more personalized content in there and obviously a lot more content than what you can have on a website. And so people do get a better sense of who you really are by going to your social media channels. But I want to dive a little bit deeper into this as well and ask you that if social media is good for engaging with new people and email marketing is really good for engaging with people that know, like and trust you, the amount of effort again in social media, and this is not to discourage anybody from social media. please don't take what I'm saying, because I think social media is not just good for what we've discussed, people coming to know you, but it's also very good for SEO purposes. It is one of the SEO tactics that they use to decide whether or not you'll show up well on Google rankings is if you do have a social media presence. So I definitely believe that there's an avenue there for social media, but I want to drill down a little bit further to get your thoughts on organic social media growth for getting new prospective clients or leads versus paid social media for the purposes of generating leads. Do you have an opinion on that?
Okay, before I answer that, I'm actually going to step back a bit and say I really advise a lot of people to try and start selling without social media to start with. Because like you said, so many people go straight into social media, they think it is a magic bullet, and then they go, oh my goodness, this is taking so much time. And the effort to do social media and to get that reach can be really draining and overwhelming.
Overwhelming, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I do say use like Facebook groups, use referrals, use word-based, try and get it out in other ways, build that email list a little bit in different ways, get people on there through referrals, outreach, and then go onto social media. Now, when we're talking about organic versus paid, I think that is opening a very big can of worms. I'll admit I am not a paid ads specialist. I do love writing advertising copy, but I'm not a specialist at that. And the one thing I would say is you'd have to have something really unique. As you've mentioned before in the podcast, social media is disruption-based marketing. You're stopping the scroll. What do you have that's going to make someone stop the scroll and be like, oh, I need this? I would look at focusing on organic first. That has normally got a really good, you know, hook, really good content, really good helping people, giving value. Do that for a while and then take your best performing organic post and then turn that into your paid, and then that's when you'll see a higher return in value in your paid advertising. So once again, it's not like a this versus that, it is an ecosystem, and we're not trying to implement the whole ecosystem all at once, because you will get burnt out, you will feel drained, you will be like, oh my goodness, this is too much. Little steps. No, maybe try with your email marketing first, do the warm outreach first, the referrals, then start adding that social media. For a while, it might just be that presence, so people can go, oh yeah, you're on social media, that's your face, I know, like you, you know, I can join your email list. And then once you have that running, do more socials, do more organic outreach. And then when you've got that fine-tuned and you know what's working, you know what's resonating with your audience, then add in the paid ads.
I love that. That's really, really good advice, because I think that is one challenging thing that I find with a lot of people, is that they want to do all of the things. And when they start doing all of the things, it becomes quite overwhelming. But naturally, as a new business owner, a lot of people are like, okay, where do I spend my time? What's going to give me the most bang for my buck? And so that's why I think it's really important for us to have these deeper discussions about what works, what we've personally seen work effectively, so that others can and learn from, you know, some of our mistakes. I know personally for me, all of my marketing has always come from more outreach-based things rather than relying on social media. But also I started my business before social media existed, and so there was such a differentiation there. But I just love to see people understanding that it's not about doing all of the things. It's about doing something that you feel most confident in. And for some people, showing up on social media may be easier for them than showing up in email or writing copy for email. So I think you've got to play to your strengths. But I really love your advice there, because it is all about growing yourself organically and making sure that you see what resonates with your audience before you go down that path of looking at paid ads. So yeah, some great advice there. Now, speaking of your email list, what strategies or what suggestions do you have for someone who is looking to grow their email list? What advice do you have around that?
We've already touched on this. What's in it for them? once again, it's always thinking, what does your audience want? What is in it for them? Gone are the days of, here's my newsletter, sign up, or even here's 5% discount, sign up. People are not really wanting that anymore. Then they're going, 5%, 10% discount, is that really worth my inbox being cluttered? And this is what we're going up against, is a cluttered inbox. So it's really focusing on what's in it for them. You could be asking your current audience, like, what can I give you of value? Like, what's going to be helpful for you? Is there a meditation? Is there, you know, a recipe? Like, is there a recipe book that you really want? Like, what's their biggest pain points? And then think about what value you can give in the form of a freebie. I think a freebie is still the number one best way to grow your email list. So having a very quick and easy win for people to come to your website or your socials and be like, oh, here's a 10-minute meditation on how to de-stress after a hard day at work. Mm. I need that. Or here's a 10-minute meditation for busy mums who have had their kids crying nonstop today. And having that value that someone can go, okay, yes, that's worth giving my email for. Mm. I think that is the biggest way you're going to grow your email list, is by providing value.
Excellent. And I've seen a lot of people now, when you go to sign up for something, it always says on the bottom, we don't spam you. You know, I think that immediately takes away that ick factor for that person. Like, do I want to give, is this worth giving up my email address for? Because they've said there, I'm not going to spam you. And some of those people that put, I'm not going to spam you, still spam you. But but I think when I read it, there's almost that, okay, maybe I'm not going to get an email every 2 hours from these people as well. So just touching on what you said, it's all about providing value. What's in it for your patients? What can you give them that's going to make them want to hand over their email address and provide value to them? And in terms of then marketing that free resource, again, is this going to be something that you would go through social media, or do you have any other suggestions for how to get, so you've created something that's really good as a lead magnet, but what's the best way to get people to see, to get their eyeballs on that lead magnet in order for them to exchange their contact details for it?
Definitely also have a landing page on your website. You can have a little bit of SEO leading towards that, and then social media. Like social media is really powerful for type of outreach. So not just posting it on your own, but other people. So looking at Facebook groups, how can you add value? If someone's saying, oh, look, I'm a busy mom, I'm really sick at work, I'm really stressed. If you've got that 10-minute meditation, be like, I'm sorry to hear that. You go, hey, I've got something that you might find valuable for that problem. Here is the lead magnet. So looking at that, also proactive outreach, where you're going and seeing, where can I add value? Where is my audience? Where are they online? What are they doing online? Where can I meet the people that I want to help and serve? So once again, it's always thinking about your client, your audience, like, where are they? What are they doing? What are their pain points? And meeting them there, helping them, trying to serve, which, being a, you know, holistic health practitioner, that does come naturally. And it's just, once again, just reiterating, it's not just in your job, but it's in your marketing. And when you really do come from that place of service in your marketing, it will resonate and you will build on it.
I love that. That's some really brilliant advice there. Now, you've got the lead. The next step is to nurture that lead. So talk to us about, what does that actually mean, and what strategies or what suggestions do you have around lead nurturing?
I really want your audience now who are listening to think about the word nurturing. How does it feel in your body? What words do you associate that with? For me, it is feeling seen and cared for. And so I would like to be like dealt like that with whoever I sign up to their emails, or if I am in someone's DMs. So we're looking at that next middle of the funnel step. These people have already come into your world. Now they've made contact with you some way. So they're a lead. They might have joined your email list. They might have sent you a DM or an email. They've contacted you. It is now about nurturing them. Make them feel seen and cared for. There is nothing worse than feeling like a number, or that you're just being sold to, or that they don't care. And whilst you may not be able to do personalized emails all the time, going through and sending that know, like, and trust factor will really help. Sending them those emails of, you know, have you been thinking this? No, have you been feeling like this? Make them feel seen that their problems that they're coming to you, you know exactly how they're feeling and what they're thinking. And you do that via story-based emails. You do that through actually caring and talking about them as a person rather than just an email or a DM.
I love that. Can you break down story-based emails as well? Because I hear this a lot about when you're writing content, it should be story-based. But can you give us a bit of an example and really break that down to make it super simple for someone who wants to utilize this technique but doesn't know how to get it going?
For me, story-based emails is about thinking about conveying messaging in a story. So rather than just say, okay, you know, five ways to cure a back and go one, dot, 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 talk about Sarah. Your Sarah came in, she was a busy mom, she's picked up her kids a few times, cracked her back. Now we were able to help her alleviate this pain via this, 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 and this. And so you're talking about real life and how what you do and how you can help has actually been implemented from theory into action. And you're taking them on a journey.
I love that. That's a great little example there. Now, you also have a freebie on your website about automating welcome emails in 20 minutes. Tell us a little bit about that, because we want to make it personalized, right? You just said that, but also you don't necessarily have all the time in the world to send every single person a personalized email. So what's your freebie about, and what's your suggestions around automating that and personalizing it?
What I found from my audience and from listening to them and listening to people that I work with as well, a lot of people would put a lot of effort into social media, and then that would send them to their website or their lead magnet, and then it would kind of just stop there. And they weren't seeing that return on investment. And a lot of the times they didn't have a welcome sequence automated, or they didn't have any follow-up, any nurturing. And so I really wanted to make it easy for my audience to have the ability to put in an automated welcome sequence. So an automated welcome sequence is anywhere from, you know, 1 to 10 welcome emails that are automatically sent once your audience either signs up to a newsletter or signs up to your lead magnet or somehow gives you their email address. I like to send people through a know, like, and trust email sequence for the welcome sequence. So, you know, here is the lead magnet, really give them that value. And then go through, once again, that I know what you're thinking type story base, like I have been where you are, and telling that story of how you overcame the problem that they've got, or how you've helped other people overcome that problem using testimonials. And I have that all set up in a workflow. So I'll go into something like MailerLite. I use Flowdesk. And as soon as that email comes in, it triggers that automation where once every, you know, 24 to 48 hours, a new email will go out with that copy and that story.
And so Flowdesk you use predominantly for that, or MailerLite?
I do.
Yeah, Flowdesk, yeah. Flowdesk is great. I love Flowdesk. We use that for the My Appointments platform as well. And it's got a very easy user interface, but also it's really affordable in comparison to a lot of other platforms, our email marketing platforms out there too.
It's not overwhelming.
Yeah.
You go to so many, and you can get very technical with email marketing. You can get into really large segmentations, different flows, different actions. But a lot of the times, until you really get to that really large stage, you need to simplify it. Like, simplify everything you can. Think about your impact rather than trying to get too technical.
Yeah, that's great. I love that. Now, one of the other questions I wanted to ask you was around about how to stand out in a crowded inbox, because we do know that there are a lot of businesses out there that are sending tons and tons of emails, some every few hours, some every multiple times a day, sending out content. And so people do often feel overwhelmed when they look at their inbox and just delete, mass delete. So I'd really love to get your thoughts on what helps someone's email stand out so that it can be opened and so that there is engagement.
So your subject lines are really crucial here. Sometimes if you want to get technical, you can even do like A-B split testing where you send out different email headlines to see which one resonates. I don't always, like I said, we can just simplify it. Think about catchy headers. curiosity. You want someone to go, oh, what does this mean? But you also don't want to be clickbaity. So it's like, you don't want to be like, here's a secret that's going to make you $1 million. And then you open it and it's like, ha, 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 just kidding. There is no secret. But you want to try and use words and sentences that are going to evoke curiosity. Well, that is storytelling. That's something that someone's going to look and be like, okay, this is going to benefit me. This is going to help me. And also realize that not every email is going to benefit every person.
Mm.
So it is just getting that feedback. It's, okay, I think, you know, on social media, I've had a few people ask me about this. This post went really well. This podcast went really well, or I've heard this podcast and it resonated with me. How can I change that into a bit of a really concise, snippy format for my email marketing and then see how it goes? It is constantly revision. It is hypothesis, testing, and then monitoring, changing it if needed.
And not beating yourself up if you don't get the immediate response, I think is key as well. We do that a lot as business owners. Oh, my God, somebody unsubscribed, or, oh, my God, I only got this many opens. But this is where you learn and grow from, right?
Exactly. I actually don't look at unsubscribes.
Mm.
I know you can probably learn things from unsubscribes, but I find you get too defeated. It brings up too much of a bad energy if you look at an unsubscribes, and it's not always about you. If they're unsubscribing, it doesn't mean your email marketing is bad. It just might mean that it's not for them. So I try not to look at my unsubscribes as well. I do look at my open rates. I do look at my click-through rates. I do look at who's commenting back. And I also send myself a copy of the email, because then I can see what it looks like in my crowded inbox, because I too have a very crowded inbox. And I find that's a really helpful thing, because if I send it to myself and then, like, if I schedule it for the next day, so I keep forgetting that it's going to come, if I then don't immediately look at it myself, I'm like, oh, okay, that didn't really resonate, that headline. So, you know, I'm going to try something else. I'm going to put an emoji here, or I'm going to use some different language here.
That's great. And can we just touch on the metrics that you mentioned? Because you talked about click-through rate, open rates. Is there any other metrics that you typically look at? I know you said you don't look at unsubscribers, but is there any other metrics that you look at? And do you know of any industry standards that we can share with my listeners about what they should expect from an open rate or a click-through rate?
With the average click-through rate, it is about 1% to 4%. So it is extremely low. And that's when we're talking about when we start getting that higher number. So if you've only got under 500 subscribers, you know, that's not a very high number to, I guess, be judging the results of your email marketing. And it's once we start getting over that 1,000, 2,000, then we start seeing those click-through rates really matter. Once again, it's a long-term strategy. It is something that it can be hard to actually measure the ROI on that. But it's really important to go, okay, these are the click-through rates. And if the click-through rates aren't happening and you're finding that your open rates as well, so how many people are opening it, start tweaking and changing things before just disregarding. But change one little thing at a time. You know, if people aren't clicking through, do you actually have a call to action?
Mm,
I know a lot of people don't have call to actions. And if you have no call to actions, they can't click through. So there is no ROI that you can measure. You can look at your open rates, but that really only tells you, A, how well your subject line has gone, and B, it doesn't really also tell you much, because a lot of the privacy laws that are coming in, like, a few years ago now, Apple put in a new update, which made it very difficult to tell who actually opened emails. Mm. So your open rate's not always accurate as well.
Mm.
But the click-through rates are the main metrics that I would look at for success.
Mm. And I just want to touch on the fact that the statistics are low. 1% to 4% is very low. But also, it's really powerful to know this, because if you get a 2% open rate or a 5% open rate, you can then celebrate the fact that you're doing well. Whereas if you are expecting to get a 50% click-through rate immediately you're going to feel disappointed. So understanding that this is what the industry trends are from some of the biggest brands, even getting, you know, 1-4% click-throughs, if you're getting anywhere near those numbers, you're still doing really, really well. And I think personally for me, it's really helpful to know what is standard, because then you know what you're working towards. And then you also don't feel disappointed if you don't get the 40 or 50% or the 30% click-through rate that you were hoping for. So I think it's really powerful metrics. For me, unsubscribers, I do look at my unsubscribers, but I don't take it personally. And, you know, this is, I think, something that I've only learned recently. If I was putting something up on social media, if I was sending an email, there was that hesitation of going, am I annoying people? Do they really want to hear from me? But then understanding that if I'm here to provide value, and like you were saying earlier, it's about, you know, providing something that somebody could benefit from, what's in it for them. But when you're sitting there and you're providing value to your people, if they are unfollowing or unsubscribing, it's not because your content is not good. It's because in most cases they're not there, or they're not ready for your message, or they've got enough from what they need from you and they don't need to hear from you right now. And what that means is that you're left with the people that want to hear from you, and that in itself is quite powerful. So if you've only got one or two people that have unsubscribed from your list, well, that's telling you that there's a whole lot of other people that still really want to hear from you as well. So I think when we stop taking those things personally, it makes life so much more enjoyable and so much more stress-free, because you're going, all right, it's not me. It's not something I've done wrong. It just made me that that person's not ready to hear from me as well. So I think it's really powerful to know that too.
And I always say, this is probably the one contradiction of, you know, always thinking about your customers. I also say, think about yourself in this instance. How do you interact with email marketing? Mm. How many signups do you do? What gets you to sign up? What do you like receiving? How do you open email? Like, when do you open it? What do you do with that? So really, I guess for a few days, notice what you do and how you do it, and then implement that learning. Because I can guarantee you, you might sign up to someone's wait list or to someone's lead magnet, and you're not going to open every single one of those emails, but there might just be one. And like after 3 months, you've finally kind of gone, okay, I've seen this person come into my email quite a lot. I kind of feel ready now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to open that. I'm going to go through that now. So also just thinking about how people use it, and that can bring great insights.
Mm. And I just want to touch on open rates for lead magnets too. I learned recently a very, very shocking statistic that said that apparently 80% of people that download free lead magnets actually don't even open the lead magnet. And that was bloody heartbreaking, because when you've spent all this time and energy putting this effort into building this lead magnet that's not even being opened, I mean, you feel really disheartened. But I actually found it more empowering, because when I was sending out this lead magnet, and I would send out an automated email a week later saying, just checking to see if you had a chance to read the ebook, I've attached it for you again, any questions, get in touch. And the response rate was really, really poor. I didn't get many people engaging. The lead magnet was fantastic. I got a lot of good feedback about the lead magnet from people on social media who'd seen it and downloaded, but the response to the email was really poor. But I didn't take that personally, because those people are on your list, right? So now you're sending your next email and you're building that know, like, and trust factor. So it doesn't matter that they downloaded your lead, but they didn't take immediate action, because this is now your opportunity to nurture that lead, build that relationship to get them to take the next step.
And it should also make it like more understandable that your lead magnet is going to have the highest open rate. So your lead magnet and welcome series have the highest open rate of any emails and email campaigns that you will ever send them. So be mindful of that. Like, the numbers are low. So it is a numbers game, and it's a long-term game. So don't kind of focus on that.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, just knowing that you're still building that know, like, and trust factor. And I think it's the old adage that a lot of people, they want to propose marriage on the first day. They put out something and then they expect that person to take immediate action. But what you said earlier, I think, was gold, and that is stop and think about what you would do. because do you see an email or do you see a Facebook post or do you see any form of marketing and you jump immediately? No, a lot of the times you're going to take your time, go check their social media, read more about them, maybe check out their website, maybe go look at their reviews. There's often a lot of steps that you as a person would naturally take before you make a decision to purchase or to book for a service. But yet as business owners, we have this expectation that people are going to just jump really quickly and it'd be great if they did, but it's not the way the world works. And that's not to downplay or make people feel bad or, you know, sound negative. This is actually really, really empowering because then you're understanding that it's not that you're necessarily doing something wrong. It's just that it takes a little bit more time to get the response. And that's perfectly okay because you as a person are probably going to be exactly the same when you make your own decisions. And I think personally, I find that really empowering. So I hope people don't feel deflated by hearing these metrics. They are intended to be, you know, knowledge is power. It's all about, you know, if you know what to expect, you can actually make some, you know, good decisions moving forward as well. So I want to ask you something that some will find controversial, and that is plain text emails versus these beautifully designed emails. Now, Flowdesk is notorious for having the most incredible designs, and that's one of the reasons why I love it. It's got a beautiful user interface. It's got some really beautiful email templates, and I love the way it's got the simplified automations for people as well. But every marketing guru that I have listened to of late all say the same thing. When you're emailing someone, you should be emailing them as if you were emailing a friend. And when you're emailing a friend, you don't go to the effort of putting this, you know, beautiful little template together. You send them a plain based text email, you say what you need to say, and you get out of there. And I think there's merit in that. But naturally, it's also nicer to look at things that look pretty because then you find that because they look pretty, it also helps break up text in the emails as well. So I'd really love to get your thoughts on what do you do personally? Do you go with plain based? Do you use the beautiful branded content? What's your advice around people who are spending all this time on this branded content? Is it worth the time and effort to send those templated, those branded templates?
There is a lot to unpack in that. So I'll try and keep it to just a few points. First of all, there is some arguments about plain text emails going through the spam easier. So when it's just plain text, there is an argument that it has greater deliverability. So therefore, that's what you should be using. Once again, how does your customer like it? You know, what type of emails do they open? What do you like as a person? I personally would never, if I'm emailing a friend, I wouldn't be using plain text. I would be having like GIFs all over that. I would be having motion in it some way to break up that text. So what I always suggest is, once again, it's that hypothesis, test, revise. Try a few. What resonates? What has higher open rates? What has higher click-through rates? Do you get any type of response? And trial it that way. Have a mix. But the key thing, I think, is remembering about readability. Not deliverability, readability. Can they open it up and easily read your copy and easily understand what you're trying to say? Because I'm all for having a very pretty email. I'm all for having images in it. I'm all for having it branded. But it can't detract from the copy. It's got to really be readable. And if you're putting in all of this stuff and you've got so many images in that it's not loading properly, so you're distracted by all the, you know, empty image sections and the text all over the place, that is not ideal. That's when a plain-based email might actually be better. So trial, test it out. Have a few that's just plain text. Have a few that's nice and pretty. What gets better response? How do you want to do it? How would you like to see it? And is it readable?
And I think that's really great advice because everyone's audience is going to be different. So for the My Appointments platform, we send emails through Flowdesk and they always look really pretty. My business partner's a graphic designer, so they look extra pretty. She puts all of her own graphics and all that sort of stuff in there. For my emails that I sent out to my own audience, I use plain-based text emails, one, for time, two, because I also believe that plain text emails typically get a higher delivery. But what I found consistently is I probably get 50 to 60, maybe sometimes even 80% open rates on my emails, depending on how specialized and segmented that email list is. Whereas with the My Appointments platform, we're getting probably very similar metrics on email opens on the pretty looking emails. So I think the lesson here is that what works for one person may not necessarily work for another. And like you said, trial and error.
Test.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. So just a couple more quick questions for you. Do you believe there's an optimal length for an email or a subject line?
Okay. So for the subject line, optimal length is between 50 to 60 characters. You really want to keep it like under 10 words. You want to have it short and snappy and induce curiosity. So you don't need to use full sentences. You don't have to kind of explain the whole thing. So you really do want to keep those subject lines quite short. You can use emojis. Emojis help break up the text. But yeah, I think 5 to 6 words is really the optimum length for a subject line. Now with your email and the body of that email, it can vary. Like, once again, it is I know people are coming here because they want answers. They just want the answer. The problem is everyone is different. You don't treat people thinking that they're going to have the same medicine for the same problem.
Great advice, yeah.
So don't expect that you're going to have the same marketing medicine for different people. Trial and error. We've both got the same mentors, Steph and Tim. They love the 9-word email. And I find it can be very powerful. A simple, how are you going with this? Do you still need help with this? And that can be a really powerful engagement email. On the other hand, I have got a few emails that I personally subscribe to that could be nearly mini novels. And because they have written so well and they've written stories about their life and what they've done and how it can impact me and the lessons I can learn through that story, I will sit there for 10 minutes in the morning over a coffee and read that. So once again, I keep it varied. I like to vary them, get that feedback, review it, and then go from there.
Like you said, test. And I want to just point out that a lot of people believe that the shorter emails work better because we can't keep people's attentions for very long. A lot of people say everything's got to be really short because people don't have long attention spans. But I'm going to say that that's not always the case. If your copy is compelling, especially if it's story-based, people are going to read it no matter how long it is. If it's engaging, if it's curiosity-based, if it's something that's getting them to relate to what you're writing, even if it's 5 sentences versus 50 sentences, you're going to keep that person engaged because you've hit the mark with what they want to read or what they want to know about as well. So again, like you said, trial different things, see what kind of responses you get and go from there.
The only little thing I would add to that is if you are going to do a longer email, make sure there is white space. Because whilst I do believe you can hold people's attention for longer than what people say you can, it is hard to read on a phone. So having that white space, making it easy to read, breaking up the text so it's not so condensed will promote that longer reading journey for your audience.
Yeah, great advice there. Absolutely. So one final question for you, Bonnie. If you could offer, I know you've given us a few little golden nuggets today as well, but if you could offer just one piece of advice to a natural health practitioner aiming to build a successful practice that they love, what would it be?
Don't get burnt out by the business. So really, really focus on your customers, your clients, who you're serving. Understand their 1 to 2 key pain points and then focus on that. So use that as your messaging over and over and over again in your social media, your email marketing, your paid ads, everything that you do. People aren't going to get bored with you talking about the same thing over and over. And just do one step at a time so you're not getting burnt out because you're here to serve and help and heal. And if you try and do everything at once on the business side, if you try and get too caught up about saying things in a nice way, in a polished way, in a different way, you're going to get burnt out. People want to be seen and cared for. And to do that, like I said, focus on that 1 to 2 pain points. And then just keep reiterating that in different type of words and sentences and ways.
Love that. Wonderful advice. How can my listeners find out a little bit more about you and your services?
I am an Insta girl. I guess that's my generation. So I love being on Instagram. I'm always on there making conversations. I love talking to people on the DMs, even if it's just a 5-minute free coffee session on Instagram DMs. I am there for that. I am here to serve anyone for their copy needs. I do also have a website. Funny enough, I actually make more sales and made my first sales without even having a website.
Very powerful. Yep. So I'll have links to your website and your social channels, as well as your free lead magnet. I'll have them in the show notes. So if people want to have a look at what your lead magnet is and see what your welcome series is all about, then they can find them in the show notes. Bonnie, it's been such a pleasure having you here today. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much, Neil. It's been my pleasure.
Thank you for tuning in today, and I look forward to having you join me in the next episode. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast to stay up to date with the latest releases. And for more helpful tips, look for me on Instagram under the handle Supercharge My Practice. This podcast is proudly sponsored by My Appointments.